Welcome everybody to the THB Strength Podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by our wonderful sponsor, THB Strength. They are the premier company for jump training and getting rid of knee pain. So if you are somebody that is trying to jump higher, they actually have a guarantee going on that if you don't gain at least 3 inches of vertical in the next 6 months, they'll coach you for free until you do. They, meaning us.
I heard the owners are incredibly handsome, super talented.
Yeah, yeah, very smart.
Very, very intelligent, very good at listening
to your needs.
Listen to your needs, your wants, your desires, try to help you meet all those.
Yeah. But in all jokes aside, we are confident that we will give you the best jump training that exists out there. And if you are ready and willing to work super hard to achieve your athletic goals, we will do our best to help you achieve them. Having said that, today's topic is how deep should you squat, which we actually shot yesterday. It was like a 40-minute episode. It was a 23-minute episode that was not posted because the audio was messed up. So we're doing it all over again.
It's actually the third time we've done this now.
Yeah.
Because we did it once in 2020, yesterday.
I feel like we can be pretty concise, though. Yes. Now that we did a practice run.
Yeah, there was a practice. Yeah. That was a warm-up.
So I guess I will start by giving my experience with deep squats because...
Wait, did we introduce it? I forget. Did we actually introduce what the topic was?
I just introduced
it. Oh, okay, okay. Yeah.
So my personal experience with squatting, if you have seen any of my older videos... Oh, by the way, somebody commented on my video and they're like, tell him to shut that stupid timer off.
I'm trying, but it literally doesn't let me. Look, every time my volume's all the way down. This shit's...
Oh. It's a ringer. You gotta go in your settings and then adjust the ringer volume.
For my timer app?
Yeah.
Not gonna happen.
Not for the timer app, just in general. It's the ringer volume.
Ringer volume?
Yeah. It's under settings.
All right, I'll use this. Whoever is complaining about that, fuck you. No, I'm playing.
So, I was an avid deep squatter. My inspiration for deep squatting was Olympic lifting. I used to be obsessed watching Olympic lifters. I would consider that one of my training backgrounds and inspirations in addition to watching pro dunkers. And I squatted deep despite, although I had above average mobility, I still didn't have the body proportions required to deep squat without getting into butt wink. One of the things we tell our athletes is squat as deep as you can according to your flexibility. If you are going into butt wink at the bottom of a deep squat, I don't care what other people are saying. This is what we, from training ourselves and training thousands of athletes and seeing what leads to injury and what doesn't lead to injury.
Along with what research
says. Yeah. We do stuff based on research.
It's not even what we think. We verified what research says.
If you're going into butt wink, that means you're not flexible enough to deep squat. And you are going to be loading the spine really, really heavily to the point where it can cause injury. Specifically it's compression from the bar being on your spine and then going under flexion while in compression with a ton of weight on your back. So despite all that, I didn't know better. I forced myself to deep squat and I had recurring back issues for a long, long time. I would be able to load up heavily for about a month, 2 months, sometimes 3 months at a time. Back flare-up would occur, I'd back off, and then I basically just repeated that process over and over again. They'd get stronger in a deep squat until eventually in 2020, it led to a very bad back injury that had me out and not training very hard for a lot of months, and I basically stalled my progress for about a year, year and a half as a result of that. This last year, I took out deep squats, started just half squatting, and it's the healthiest my spine has ever been. So yeah, probably never gonna deep back squat again. There is an argument to be made that spines can adapt. The stuff that we follow in terms of back research is Stuart McGill. One of the arguments against Stuart McGill's research is that his research was done on dead pig spines.
You've actually spoken with
Stuart McGill, yeah.
Dr. Stu.
Yeah, yeah. If you guys don't know who Travis Reynolds is, his Instagram is @TravisDunks. He actually had a horrible back injury, basically because of the same thing. And then, yeah, he actually worked directly with Stuart McGill. I think he did like two or three one-on-one calls with him. And he also hasn't had any back issues since then. He's gone back to doing East Bay dunks. Right now he's trying under both dunks. So back help is a whole nother podcast topic, but our reasoning for not going into butt wink on a squat is you can run into back issues. We've seen it over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, our reason, because this is about deep squatting or squat depth, we have to cover that because that determines whether we think someone should or shouldn't.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to like the actual viability and efficacy of deep squatting and in terms of research and everything else, typically you're not going to see a lot of deep squatting research. Reason being is most times they just say a back squat and they'll define a back squat as the knee joint at 90 degrees, or they'll say the hips below parallel, or however they do it. Typically it's 90 degrees in the knee joint, actually. A deep squat they'll define as the knee at, I guess, 130 degrees of flexion or something like that. But it's like basically below parallel. They do look at Olympic weightlifting, and they will look at the research related to that. And so it pretty much indicates, in terms of knee health, it is lower loading on the ACL. There's higher loading on the ACL on a half squat, which is kind of interesting. And then they look at kind of all the other tissue and things like that. I think the most prevalent research study, though, is the ACL one. A lot of people refer to that when they're trying to support deep squatting and things like that. But for knee health, it pretty much, I would say you don't need it. I think that it's important to get strong specifically for tendons and the range of motion that you're going to be using in your sport. So, you know, if I'm a 1 foot jumper, I need to get good at quarter squats. If I'm a 2 foot jumper, I need to get good at half squats. Probably don't need deep squats even. You know, like Jill Cook and Ebony Real say, you're just wasting time. You don't really need to do that. You know, you're just adding steps to the process. Yeah, you might increase your tissue resilience a little bit, but you're going to be spending months and months doing that whenever you could have been doing depth drops or phase three tendon loading, like I like to call it, or just stretch shortening cycles, right? Actual jumping. So I think in terms of rehab, you know, that kind of covers it for that. For the meniscus, deep squatting is contraindicated, right? So for cartilage, you're going to see very high loading in the high pressure point positions. So if you have chondromalacia or you have a meniscus injury, deep squatting is going to fuck it up. And then quarter squatting, really heavy, is probably going to mess it up too. So you don't, you know, you want to avoid those two end ranges and kind of be in the middle where the pressure between the kneecap is really high for chondromalacia. And then for the meniscus, it's actually mostly just deep squatting because that's where it's just contraindicated in research. We see time and time again that it is going to flare up the meniscus. It's going to cause problems and it can ultimately lead to an increase. Is he going to hit that car? He's. See how close he was?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad I didn't park there. So yeah, I think that it's can be good for tendons, I guess, if you can handle it. Like if you don't go into butt wink, I think it can be good.
I will say anecdotally.
For guys with the distal tendinopathy, I think deep squatting is really good.
Anecdotally, when I've been strong and pain-free in a deep squat position, I tend to have less tendinopathy issues.
But you have more back issues.
yeah, it's a trade-off. Well, that's where front squat, I have enough mobility.
Which tracks, I mean, if you're talking just about tendons, that's going to be one of the highest loaded positions. You're in the worst leverage and you're in the most compression. So if you don't have pain in that position, you're probably going to be pretty healthy. You know, you're probably going to be able to handle a lot. But that's further along down the continuum than you might even need to be jumping healthy or doing performance training.
I do think it's like a weird medium, as specifically talking about knee pain. It is, I think the reason being is, I do agree that you don't need it. It's just easier to control the loading. Versus like, versus if you're jumping, guys usually don't have self-discipline when jumping and stuff like that. But if you're careful about your elastic loading, you don't need to get strong as hell in a deep squat position.
Yeah. So then I think the other one would be,
Training purposes.
I was gonna say for training.
I was gonna give you a hypothetical scenario that I think will explain training purposes. You have an athlete who has the mobility to deep squat.
Okay.
Explain the progression of them squatting. How deep would you have them squatting? At what times are they gonna be doing certain types of squats?
Okay, so they're healthy.
And they're healthy, yeah.
They're healthy, they can deep squat.
Yep.
So they come to me, they're healthy, they can deep squat. What's their vertical?
37, 38 inches. Two foot jumper. They can deep squat 315.
Okay, so I'm definitely going to have them deep squat. Probably going to have them deep squat a lot. Early in the year, they're going to be doing really high volume deep squatting. I'll probably keep it in year round, but the frequency of the deep squatting is going to change. So Fridays, for guys like that, typically Fridays or Saturdays, I'll put in either some sort of loading or I'll put in slow deep squats. If they're a 2 foot jumper and they're really healthy, I'll probably put it on Saturday and have them jump on Friday. But that that last third high intensity session in the weight room, if it is high intensity, I will try to put full squats in, anywhere between 6 and, I mean, it could be as high as 10 really early in the year. So we'll say between 10 and 5 reps, maybe 4 on that Friday session. And the reason I do it on the, we'll call it Friday or Saturday, we'll call it end of week session. The reason I do that is because I like that day to usually stay as a, I don't want to call it inertially focused. I'll call it like strength speed, strength stimulus, kind of absolute strength stimulus. The reason being, I never want to get too far away from that because one, it's really hard to load deep squatting in season when you haven't been doing it because it causes immense, immense amounts of soreness. Typically in the adductors, guys will get very, very sore in their hips. They'll get really, really sore too. So I don't really like to ever take it out. I always want to keep it in at least a little bit. Early in the year, they're going to be doing higher frequencies. So maybe they'll do twice a week or three times a week between front squatting and back squatting, maybe between 6 and 12 to 15 reps. If it's a 6 month macro cycle, typically guys see macro cycles are a year, but they don't have to be. They can be any length of time. You can split it up however you want. In this case, we'll say a 6 month macro cycle. Month two, probably going to start building into lower rep schemes. So maybe that, like, I don't know, like 8 to 3. And then I'm going to start playing around, and those are going to be full squats as well. And then I'm going to start playing around with tempos and different types of tempos or pauses in deep squats if he can do it. Probably about 3 months out from when I want him to be jumping high, I'll probably cut the frequency to once a week, and that's about it. Reason being, I want to get more specific. So when I'm 3 months out, probably be doing, you know, some form of heavy half squatting, maybe building tempos into the deep squats at 3 months out, depending on the athlete, maybe I would be doing isometrics or eccentric work close to maximally. 2 months out, yeah, probably 3 months out, I'd be in like special prep. So they'd be doing a lot of specific work in the weight room. 2 months out, they're probably going to be doing either fast eccentrics or super maximal eccentrics. 1 month out, and those would be in partial ranges of motion. 1 month out, they're probably going to be, in the last 3 months, we'll say they're deep squatting once a week. Probably still the same, not very heavy. Just maintaining that quality because I think it is helpful and useful, but that's not where most of the loading is going to be. That's not where that is there to maintain tissue quality, I would say, and your ability to produce force over full ranges of motion, right? If you look at any athlete who's really, really explosive in their activity, they typically can produce a lot of force over big ranges of motion. Does that mean a full squat per se? No, most people don't need that level of explosiveness across a full range of motion. And so I'm not typically going to be pushing that up or using that as an explosive strength or speed strength stimulus or strength speed stimulus. I'm not using full squats as a means of achieving that goal. I'm using it for a max strength stimulus. I'm using it for a way to improve hypertrophy. In some cases, maybe we see the nervous system get some positive adaptations because you're moving a heavy weight over a big range of motion. Maybe you have some tendon hypertrophy or cross-sectional area proliferation, meaning like the tendon's getting bigger and thicker. We have more tendon tissue. Maybe that's benefiting the stiffness, which if the athlete gets more explosive is really helpful. But yeah, that'd pretty much be, I guess, how I would integrate them. And then if they can't deep back squat, I'll usually have them deep front squat, which is what we do with Isaiah. So I try to keep some deep front squatting in each cycle. Either that, or I would put in some other full range of motion knee exercise. It doesn't have to be squatting. I just want the quad to be loaded across the full range of motion and the hip to be loaded across the full range of motion.
How would you progress somebody that doesn't have the mobility to full squat? Like, let's say you can only half squat. Is there a way that you go from general to specific as far as joint angles, or is that kind of like?
I still would.
Tough.
So if it were a two, let's say like me, right? Like me in my case. So if I'm, let's say again, it's the same 6 month example, 6 months out, I would do leg extensions. I would do knee extensions because I can get full range of motion in that activity. I might do a hack squat or I might do a single leg press. Any way that I can do full range of motion, I will. And then 5 months out, you'd follow the same progression, right? Mm. Would I keep that in year round though? Probably not. I probably wouldn't because it just gets too difficult to have that be a, I don't want that being a staple exercise. I don't want a leg press, single leg press or a knee extension being a staple exercise.
Yeah.
I probably would be okay. I mean, I can half squat decently well. I'd probably be fine with that being a staple exercise in the program on that, you know, third day of the week throughout the year, but it's pretty much always going to stay as a feel good lift in that scenario. So if they feel better, like in my case, I feel pretty good doing a leg press, but I don't have a leg press here and I don't have a leg extension here. So I'm probably going to do, you know, I'm not going to do a sissy squat. That's probably going to be way overloaded for a deep knee. First off, it's not even a deep knee flexion exercise unless you're touching the ground. I don't really like reverse Nordics because they don't really address the hip. That's another reason why I don't really like
sissy squats. And it's harder to load.
It's really hard to load. It's kind of unsafe. You put a lot of stress on the joint, actually, by getting that far out. I've never really seen it work for tendons too well.
Yeah.
I've not seen it work for joints in general.
I think leg extension and leg press is probably...
Those would be the ways I would get deep knee flexion. Like, if you had those, I would be fine doing those once a week.
Yeah.
The only thing about specifically leg extension is it does put a lot of compression on the joint, specifically the kneecap pulling in. I would be totally fine with that.
Wait,
I would
get a leg
that.
Press?
Yeah.
Get a leg press and a leg extension?
We don't have space, dude. It's going to look like...
No, so what I'm thinking, because Marissa's going to move out soon, put all that stuff, that's the storage room.
Okay, I like that. I like that. That could work. I would be down for that.
Right,
so yeah,
cool.
I think that's probably how I would do it. Everything would stay pretty much the same in that case, but I would just get a different deep knee flexion exercise or feel good lift to maintain that quality.
Yeah.
But typically, even if you couldn't deep squat, you can still maintain your strength levels. I mean, if I can't get in that full range of motion in a squat, I sure as shit am not getting it in a jump.
Yeah.
So as deep as I'm getting in a squat, that's probably the max range of motion I'm going to hit anyways. You're not getting the overload that you get maybe from a full range of motion squat, which the benefit is you're loading it at length. It's a really good stimulus for muscle hypertrophy. It's a really good stimulus for the nervous system because you can push so long over a full range of motion. And it really is just a different level of hard, which I like, that you don't really get in even a half squat, in my opinion.
It is like, I mean, I think even... Because we haven't done front squats in about 2 months, and this cycle we reintroduced them on Monday, and I mean, I did 275 for sets of six, and it was tough, and it's like a different type of hard. Like I think about my half squat 425 for six, and that was crazy. But then it's like, it just feels different.
It's hard.
Like,
you can just it's a really it, difficult
I would describe
movement.
It as. The half squat feels like I'm like gnarly messed up after it.
This and it's just
like,
relief.
And it's like on my core and everything. It's like a lot. But yeah, the deep squats is just muscularly. Like I get like a crazy ass pump.
Yeah.
I don't get from anything else.
Yeah, which I think is why you get so much hypertrophy from it.
Yep.
I think it's really, really good.
That's how these big old things
built. Bro. They're built like drumsticks. So I think, that's pretty much how I would do that. I think we covered injury, we covered performance. The only other thing I'd say that I really like about full squatting is that it is a great equalizer if you normalize for limb length. So like a lot of the times people would be like, well, you know, someone said this on your video the other day. Well, I squat this and how come I don't jump that high? And I'm like, well, are you 6'2" with long tibias and long femurs? And is your deep squat the same as his deep
Every
squat?
Every time I see that comment, it's like a 5'9" guy.
Every time
I see somebody say,
with short
your
legs.
Weight, every time I see somebody say, hey, I squat the same as you, or I lift the same as you, and I'm your weight, why don't I jump as high? Like 9 out of 10 times, I go in there, and it's like a 5'9", like Hooper, it's like stocky. And then...
But it's not the same.
And then,
it's not the same.
And then the one, like the rare, like 10% of the time, where someone that's actually similar to me, it'll be like a CrossFitter or something that's
strong
that does no jumping.
That does no jumping, zero jumping, and does not have necessarily the same.
And you know who the
mass.
One guy?
I don't think the body mass is the same in that case.
Actually,
those guys
people,
are way heavier.
You know who the two athletes that I see that I'm like, okay, similar proportions, same weight room numbers, and
don't jump as high.
No. Like same weight room numbers, all that stuff. Is T flying high and J Clark the jumper, who are also too near 50-inch vertical.
Yeah. I mean, CrossFitters are probably the ones that get close, but they just don't jump. They have horrible jump technique. Their tendons are usually incredibly stiff, super freaking stiff. We were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
Those guys.
And ton of upper body.
But they don't have any RFD. They don't have any RFD. Mm-hmm. Like on top, they have RFD. Don't get me wrong. They can power clean a lot of weight, but it's not the same. Like, they don't have elastic RFD.
There's levels to that.
Yeah, there's levels to RFD, and there's elastic RFD where it's like fast eccentric loading. They're shitty at fast eccentric loading.
Yeah.
Really bad. If they did it more, probably be really good. We coached a couple guys
RFD,
to
by
over
the way,
40-inch verticals that, like the brothers that we used to coach that were like that. Their RFD in really fast stuff was not very good. Like, they could get stronger and stuff like that, but it was like they'd be better off doing things that would improve their RFD more, and usually they weren't healthy enough to jump as much as they probably needed.
Specificity.
Yeah, they
lack. You look at a CrossFitter, how many times
they
are they power
big.
Clean?
They were too big, too. Way too big. Yeah. They needed to be way leaner. So, all right, did that cover it?
Yep. By the way, RFD is rate of force development.
Yeah.
If you don't know what that is, I'm trying to be good about defining
acronyms. They just have to be smarter. No, I'm kidding. All right. Well, thanks for listening to the video or this podcast, guys. If you're on a streaming platform, make sure that you give 5 stars. Subscribe if it's an option. If you're on YouTube, like, comment, leave us some feedback. If it's negative feedback, I'll usually listen to what you're saying, but I will complain
about it. I actually like the negative feedback. Or
I always
think
complain about it, but I like to hear it.
Especially
or if you think we're wrong, yeah.
Yeah, if you think we're wrong. Some of my biggest learning experiences this year have been...
When people
when I'm wrong, because when somebody tells me I'm wrong, I go and read, I pull up Google Scholar and then I go down the rabbit
hole. I take it personally, but I also learn from it because I took it personally, which is always really good. So keep that in mind. You give me a week to think about it, and you know, I'll come to my senses and be like, yeah, you're probably right. Which
is
good.
Like, I got into an argument with somebody yesterday. It was about our video, our last podcast.
About what?
They said that we titled it wrong. Because we said, which one's better, max strength work and jumping, or max strength or strength training plus power, something like that. And they got me on a technicality. They were like, oh, max strength work. There's other ways to do max strength work. Like, shouldn't be called just strength training. It was something like that. Basically, I defined it wrong, and I was like, okay.
You can
technically
have
you're right, but
I don't even know how
the
to
assumption.
Say that.
I'll show you after this, but
yeah, let me just say this. If you thought that appealing to the masses, or if you thought that appealing to that very small niche nuance is going to be beneficial for your online business, you're fucking wrong. But hey, you can get up on those technicalities if you'd like.
I do appreciate that stuff though, because I do think that defining words is very important. Finding words and using
that's
words
only
correctly.
Because you had one bad experience with coaches saying elasticity, and ever since then, you've been upset
about it.
No, it
was force velocity.
Oh,
that's
that was bad.
That's where it really started.
But it made sense for you over time. Eventually, you caught up. Anyways, like I said, if you're on the YouTube, leave feedback, comment, like, subscribe to my channel, subscribe to his channel, and
especially if you're not a THP athlete, the least you can do.
Yeah,
just
we're
leave
just
a 5-star on
like
the media.
Like, what the hell? Anyways, peace out, guys.
You know,
see you tomorrow.
What's crazy, John?
What?
I remember when you were on a podcast in 2018. You can keep this in.
Oh yeah, what was it?
I remember when John went on a podcast in 2018, and I listened to it, and I was like, damn, I could listen to this all day. I probably listened to it like 3 or 4 times. I forgot who had you on.
Steven?
I think it was an Australian guy who had you on their podcast.
I don't remember who it was.
It was definitely an Australian guy. It was like a.
Oh, is it Oscar?
Yeah.
Oh,
Oscars.
Yeah.
And then I remember like, damn, like this is so informational. And now the fact that you're on podcasts every day, I would be mind blown. If it was 2017 and I had this info, I'd be mind blown. So
wait, was I on that before I started coaching you?
It was around the same time. So you healed my knees, and then like
hopped off in the in between.
And it was. That podcast was actually one of like the reasons, because it was like that podcast happened, then I went home, and then Austin was like, look at my training, and I was like, all right, can you ask John if
will
I
he
can
take
get...
me back?
Yeah. So
glad I did.
Yeah.
It worked out for both of us.
Having said that, if you find any value, like the video, share it.
It's time for your Q&A.
Peace out. Damn it.